I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Pastor Daniel Insing from the Las Vegas Rescue Mission. The local nonprofit's holding its annual bottled water drive right now to provide hydration for those experiencing homelessness. Pastor Insing, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So for those who don't know, what is the Las Vegas Rescue Mission?
So the Las Vegas Rescue Mission, we have been around for over 50 years, assisting people that are experiencing homelessness, addiction, and just anybody that needs help. So we provide emergency shelter, overnight shelter. We have dorms for single fathers experiencing homelessness. We also have a full service kitchen where we serve 30,000 meals every single month, feeding low income families, neighbors, the working poor, not just homeless. And then we also have a full service thrift store that just serves all of Las Vegas.
That's awesome. So what do you specifically do as a pastor at the mission?
So I'm the director of the ministry department. I oversee all of the Christian curriculum as far as what we do in our morning devotions, our New Beginnings class on Tuesdays, Celebrate Recovery on Monday nights, and then, of course, Sunday services on Sunday. I oversee all of that and then, of course, help facilitate a lot of what goes on in our Christian programming.
Okay. So tell us about your annual bottled water drive.
So we do this every year. Of course, it gets very hot in our valley. And one of the things that we provide to the community year round is bottled water. So no matter who comes to the gate that wants water, whether it's they come to the front gate or come to the community meal in the evening, we provide that bottled water year round, but also 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So somebody might come up at 2 o'clock in the morning needing some water, and we're there to provide that. So we do this drive every single year to just make sure that we have enough to provide to the community that comes to us for help.
Okay. So you're basically open 24/7 for people in need?
Yes and no. So we have, like, if somebody needs shelter, we have particular intake times. But as far as water goes, yes, absolutely. We're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Nice. Okay. How much water do you expect to collect over the summer?
It's hard to say. I think it's pretty different every single year. It just kind of depends on who really shows up. We have seen in the thousands as far as water bottles. We have people that will donate pallets, and we'll have people that will just show up to shop at our thrift store that'll bring a case of water with them when they come. So it really, there's really no way to estimate.
Okay, so besides bottled water, what else do you need donations of?
So we are always in the need of canned goods, but then also women's underwear, men's underwear, socks. Hygiene kits are a huge need, including feminine hygiene products, but hygiene kits are a really big need. People come to the gate, need stuff like suntan lotion, toothpaste, toothbrush, a razor to shave. Just the kind of the practical needs that we have that we don't necessarily think about day to day just because it's an automatic thing. But for our homeless community, it's a necessity, especially stuff like water, sunblock. You know, the sun is pretty blistering in the summertime. So sunblock is a huge need for our homeless community.
Yeah, for sure. So how can people go about donating bottled water or the other supplies that you need?
So they can just show up to the front gate during normal business hours and donate to us directly. They can also contact us through our website, vegasrescue.org. Any one of those avenues would be just the perfect way to get a hold of us.
What are the regular hours that they could drop off water at the front gate?
7 days a week, 9 to 5. As far as like sundry items, like if they're donating to the thrift store, that would be during our thrift store hours. So Tuesday through Saturday, 9:30 to 3 p.m.
Okay. And how long does the donation drive run?
So specifically to the water bottles, that's going to run through August 31st, 2025.
Awesome. Okay. So you did mention the website, but one more time, where can people go to find out more about the Las Vegas Rescue Mission in general, make a donation, or even volunteer to help out?
Yeah, they can go to our website, vegasrescue.org. If they're looking to volunteer, there's a volunteer hub on there. They can sign up for an account and look at different available shifts. That is also a big need here at the mission. And any events that we have going on, or any kind of water bottle drive, or any other types of events, they're all on our website, vegasrescue.org.
Perfect. Okay. So once again, that website is vegasrescue.org. That's the Las Vegas Rescue Mission, vegasrescue.org. You can find out more about what the mission does. You can find out how to volunteer. You can make a donation. If you'd like to donate to the bottled water drive, it's currently running all the way through to August 31st. And of course, water is so crucial to those who are living outside. And you can either go down and take the water to the gate during regular business hours, 9 to 5, 7 days a week, or you can contact them on the website for more, vegasrescue.org. And we've been speaking today with Pastor Daniel Insing. He's the pastor from the Las Vegas Rescue Mission. And Pastor Insing, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know more about what the mission does and also the bottled water drive and the hygiene product drive that is providing supplies for those who need it. So thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
After I lost my mom, I lost my way. Then I found youth advocate programs, YAP.
YAP gives communities alternatives to residential care, youth incarceration, and neighborhood violence. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn more at yapinc.org.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with trend expert Justine Santinello. The latest AI-powered smart tech can help out whether you're at home or on the road. Just in time for summer travel, Justine has the latest lowdown. Justine, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So what are some of the latest smart technologies?
Yeah, so there are some amazing tech essentials that are out right now. I mean, what you can find out on the market is truly unbelievable. That'll make your traveling easier, right? Sound better, make the whole experience more entertaining for you. So stuff that you want to be looking for: portable chargers, e-readers, luggage trackers, I think is a big one now that you could keep track of your luggage and exactly where it is. If you're going to be working while you're traveling, having a portable hotspot, a small portable monitor, you can even buy now a suitcase with built-in charging stations. And then, of course, if you're going to be traveling overseas, you want to be looking for travel adapters, but ones that can work in over 200 countries. You want to be picking up the items that are going to build you up for success. And then definitely look for an accessory organizer to help keep everything in one place without all of your cords getting tangled up.
Yeah. Okay. Now, it sounds like there's a lot of different options that people can get as far as smart tech goes. How do they pick and choose between all the options out there?
Sure. I mean, I think it really does come down to what is the purpose of your trip? You know, if you're traveling for work, that's obviously very different than leisure. So you're going to need more things like a portable hotspot, portable monitors. You're going to want to make sure that you have maybe multiple chargers so that you're always prepared, that you have adapters, that you have chargers that have built-in cords. But if you're traveling for leisure, maybe you don't need all of those things, right? Maybe then you want to find the smart tech that'll actually help you to unplug a little bit. So like an e-reader is a great way to unplug because you could download all of the titles you want to have ahead of your trip so that you don't even need Wi-Fi anymore. And you could purchase those titles right onto your e-reader without having to pay extra for a paperback.
Yeah, great tips. Now, sometimes people, when they unplug mentally, they also want to silence their phones. What are some ways that we can do that without losing the important messages?
Yeah, of course. So this is where one of my favorite tech items comes in, and that's the Ray-Ban Meta Glasses. What's really cool about these is that you can keep your phone away, but you can choose how connected you want to be. So a little bit more about these glasses. So the Ray-Ban Meta Glasses actually have AI built in, which is really cool. Now, if you want a visual here, these are the Ray-Bans we all know and love. They're stylish. They have a new Skylar frame with a cat eye shape, which is really cool. They're combining that style we know with cutting edge technology. So for example, while you're traveling, you can ask questions in real time and get answers right on the spot. So if you're traveling, you see a monument or a historic landmark, you can ask questions while you're, let's say, walking around, taking in the sights. You can be listening to music or your favorite podcast, and you don't need to bring an extra pair of headphones with you. But probably my favorite part is the fact that you can capture moments. You can take videos and photos without having to go for your phone. You could do that right through the glasses, which allows you, I think, to stay connected in the moment. You know, I'm a mom traveling with your small kids. There, you don't have that extra second to take the phone out to capture a moment of your kids while you're traveling. So to be able to do that quickly and easily without my phone on the glasses is life-changing.
Are they sunglasses or glasses?
Both. So you can have prescription built in. You can use them as sunglasses, your choice, and truly in amazing styles. They look really like regular glasses. And one of the new features that is very cool if you're going to be traveling internationally is language translation. So amazing feature. You can actually ask for directions or have a conversation with someone without worrying about the language barrier. So you can speak in English, French, Italian, Spanish. You will actually hear the person you're talking to in real time in the language of your preference. And then if you want to, you could go as far as showing that person a translated script of the conversation on your phone. And you can do this even when you're in airplane mode. All you have to do is say, hey, Meta, start live translation, and you're in it.
Wow. Okay. That sounds pretty cool.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, the things that these glasses can do now, I mean, even if you're staying close by, you're doing more of a staycation. You know, when I park my car at a mall, this can remember now for me where I park. You know, it's just, it's amazing. You could do a currency converter. Like, it's just, the possibilities are really endless, and they're constantly updating and making the glasses in newer versions with even more features.
All right. So no more wandering around the parking lot trying to figure out where your car is and pressing the remote to hear it beep.
Right? That's a big one for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. It sounds like there's a lot of great new smart tech this summer. Where can people go for more information?
Sure. You guys could go to meta.com/AI-glasses.
Okay. So once again, meta.com/AI-glasses is the website if you want to find out about the Meta glasses that Justine was talking about, with a lot of cool functionality for traveling, for home, meta.com/AI-glasses. And of course, plenty of smart chargers out there and different gadgets that Justine has talked about today as well. We've been speaking today with trend expert Justine Santinello. And Justine, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know more about this technology, because we see it out there, but we don't actually get to hear what it does for us. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, of course. Thank you for having me.
How about all text? You focus on the road.
As a passenger, you have the power to prevent an accident. There are 1,000 ways to stop a distracted driver. Choose one.
A message from CTIA.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Chris George, veterinarian and infectious disease specialist with Elanco Animal Health. New data from Elanco shows that canine parvovirus is most prevalent in 7 states, which include our neighbors, California and Arizona. But not being on the list doesn't mean our dogs are safe from parvo. Dr. George, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather.
So what exactly is canine parvovirus?
Canine parvovirus is one of the most common, highly contagious, and potentially fatal viruses that we see in dogs. Now, it's most common in our younger or unvaccinated dogs. Think puppies, ages around 6 weeks to 6 months of age. But it can really happen in dogs of any age. And it's a gastrointestinal or GI virus. So the most common symptoms that we see associated with it are things like vomiting, loss of appetite, diarrhea, or lethargy, which is generally acting sick or tired.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that it's more common in younger and unvaccinated dogs, but how common is it overall?
Overall, we can see there's been reported upwards of 300,000 cases worldwide per year. So there can be a lot of parvovirus cases. However, parvovirus has not been a disease that has a formal reporting system. Like a lot of our human diseases, like measles, have very formal reporting systems. We don't have that for parvovirus in veterinary medicine. But fortunately, Elanco has come out with a ParvoTrack tool, which is a tracker where we can identify outbreaks of parvovirus down to the county level. So our pet parents can sign up for alerts to be notified if there is an outbreak in their area. They can also report cases themselves. So if unfortunately they do have a pet that experiences parvo, they can report those cases to make sure everyone in their community is aware that parvo is right there in their own backyard.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great.
When you mentioned backyard, how exactly is parvo spread?
Parvo is spread through either direct or indirect contact with contaminated feces. So a dog doesn't have to necessarily go and eat another dog's pile of poop, which we all know they do sometimes, but they could just simply walk through a contaminated area and then lick their paws later on. It can also be spread by you or I. We can get it on our shoes or even our hands. And when the dogs come in and lick us after we get home, they can be exposed to parvovirus that way. So it's very hardy. It can live in the environment for a year or potentially longer.
How can we tell visually whether feces are contaminated or not? Or is that even possible?
Not really possible. You can't tell just by looking at it, but that's where preventing parvovirus becomes more of a team effort. And just being a good member of the community, a good citizen, and scooping your dog's poop. So make sure if you are out on a walk with your dog to pick up that poop and throw it away so that you can help limit the spread or exposure of parvovirus to other dogs.
Okay, so besides keeping our dogs away from other dogs' poop and scooping up after our own dogs, how can we protect our dogs from parvo?
Yeah, prevention is key with parvovirus. And fortunately, we have very effective vaccines for canine parvovirus. So talk with your local veterinarian, make sure your dog is up to date on vaccinations. And if you are fortunate enough to get a new family member and a new pet in the family, make sure you get them to the vet as soon as possible to have that general wellness exam performed and get started on those vaccines and other preventative medicine to help prevent diseases, not just parvo, but a lot of other really terrible diseases that we can see in our really susceptible puppies.
All right. And what does up to date mean exactly for parvo specifically?
Yeah, so it really depends on the individual patient or individual pet. And so typically, we recommend vaccine boosters every 3 years for canine parvovirus. But that's where talking with your local veterinarian to see what's best for your individual pet. They may recommend doing vaccine titers to see if they still have protection from previous vaccinations, or empirically, or just recommend boosting those vaccines to make sure they're protected against parvovirus. So really just talking with your local veterinarian, that's going to be your best source for information for your pet and your family.
Okay. And if our dog does end up with parvo against all odds, what are the treatment options?
Historically, we've not had a targeted treatment for parvovirus. So our treatments were geared at symptomatic care. So it typically involved intensive ICU care in the hospital, things like IV fluids to keep them hydrated or anti-nausea medications to treat the vomiting. But we've never had something that was more targeted. Until now, Elanco has come out with a canine parvovirus monoclonal antibody, or CPMA for short. It's the first and only USDA conditionally approved targeted treatment for parvovirus. So it actually binds and neutralizes the virus itself. So we're treating the underlying disease and not just another symptom. And it can help puppies feel better faster and get home quicker.
Okay. So where can listeners go for more information about canine parvovirus or to sign up to get those alerts and report cases that you mentioned?
There's a great website available called stopparvo.com. You can go there to learn all about canine parvovirus. And as you mentioned, sign up for that ParvoTrack tool so you're notified if there is an outbreak in your area, and help your community by reporting cases if unfortunately you do have a dog that comes down with parvo.
All right. Awesome. So once again, that website is stopparvo.com. stopparvo.com. Parvo is spelled P-A-R-V-O, stopparvo.com. You can find out more information about canine parvovirus there. You can get access to the Parvo Track tool, where you can get alerts if there's parvovirus breakouts in the area, or you can report your own cases if your dog or a neighbor's dog has parvovirus. So stopparvo.com. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Chris George, veterinarian and infectious disease specialist with Elanco Animal Health. And Dr. George, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know more about parvovirus, how to prevent it in our own dogs, and what to do about it. And especially this Parvo Track tool sounds like a really innovative and great tool. So thank you so much for sharing today.
Thank you so much, Heather, for having me.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Bernadette Mayfield Clark, president of the American Speech Language Hearing Association, and Dr. Tina McNamara, past president. Effective communication is essential for caregivers, and a recent poll takes a look at the caregiver experience when resources may be harder to come by. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having us, Heather.
Thank you. A pleasure.
So first of all, what is the American Speech Language Hearing Association?
The American Speech Language and Hearing Association is a scientific, professional, and credentialing association of about 241,000 members.
Okay. Dr. Mayfield Clark, what were some of the key findings in your recent poll?
The recent poll indicated that over 50% of the caregivers are women, and they are in the age of 48 years old or older. The recipients, the care recipients, went anywhere between 11 to 68 years of age, respectively. These caregivers have full-time jobs outside of the place where they care for the recipient. But the recipients were not always recipients. They actually lived with the caregiver prior to requiring additional assistance. We also found that the ratings for, as is, audiologists and speech language pathologists by the caregivers was extremely favorable. They found that these professionals made their daily lives a lot more supportive and really ended up being a great deal of comfort for them. 89% of the caregivers indicated that everyone should seek an audiologist or speech language pathologist. The percentage of speech language pathologists went anywhere between 77% to 91%. But you also have those individuals, as Tina will tell you about, the neighbors who can also assist. Anyone who's interested in making sure that the caregiver's burden is less, to treat them to dinner, to take them to coffee, shop for groceries, ask for assistance, or even provide resources for them, such as the National Caregivers Hotline, which is 211, or use our website, which is ASHA.org, to identify your speech language pathologist or audiologist.
Nice. Okay. What sorts of resources do caregivers need to make their lives easier?
There are a lot of local departments of aging, health, education. One thing to remember, these caregivers are not just giving care to parents, but they're giving care to children. A lot of times children that require some extra assistance. So helping them find those local departments is very helpful for these individuals. Also, as Dr. Clark mentioned, there's the 211 National Caregiver Hotline. If you call that, they'll connect you with some local resources. And also, just being a good neighbor and a good friend offers a lot of support for these individuals. Only about 21% of these individuals are supported in any way or compensated. The poll showed that on average, a caregiver spent 39 hours a week caregiving. And it's a big mental health concern for these individuals. So anything you can do to provide resources, as Dr. Clark also mentioned, ASHA.org is a good site to go to find names of speech pathologists or audiologists in your area that can help you. They definitely will address these communication needs that are so critical in not only the caregiver, but also the care recipient's mental health and well-being.
Yeah, awesome. How important is effective communication to the caregiver experience?
Effective communication is a human right. And with the caregiver, having that care recipient being able to understand the message in order to respond appropriately is a barrier. And there's a lot of communication breakdown associated with it. What happens is the care recipient a lot of times gets frustrated or angry because their message is not being received by the caregiver, which then causes the caregiver to become frustrated. So the caregiver has to find ways to be able to effectively communicate with them. And the numbers suggest that they're trying. 36% said they're doing the best they can with it, and it appears to be working. 32% said, well, yeah, we're trying and it's coming through. And the other 27% said, well, we're going to keep trying until they find a comfortable medium there for them to work through their communication issues during caregiving.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay, you both provided resources, but one more time, where can caregivers and others go to find more information or support?
ASHA.org is A-S-H-A.org. That's our professional website. Then you have 211, which is the national hotline for caregiving, which provides resources and products.
And also tell them to look into their local departments of aging, health, and education. They oftentimes can find resources there.
Yeah, awesome advice. So once again, the website for the American Speech Language Hearing Association is ASHA.org, A-S-H-A.org. That's American Speech Hearing Association. So ASHA.org. If you're a caregiver looking for that extra support, 211 is the National Caregiver Hotline, 211. And of course, check for local resources because we have plenty of resources here that offer help to caregivers and to others as well. We've been speaking today with Dr. Bernadette Mayfield Clark, president of the American Speech Language Hearing Association, or ASHA, and Dr. Tina McNamara, past president. And I really appreciate you both being here, sharing more information about the recent poll, how caregivers are feeling, and what can be done to help and support them. So thank you both so much for your time today.
Well, thank you for having us, Heather.
Yeah, thank you.
We are the 25%. That's a quarter of all Americans, over 61 million people with a disability. And we want a world where everyone is 100% included, just like you. Easter Seals Disability Services. We are the 25.org.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Jerry Giordano, award-winning copywriter, screenwriter, creative director, and author of Your 7 Words to a Happier You, Unlock the Story, Sabotaging Your Relationships. Jerry, thank you so much for being here today.
Heather, what a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So what inspired you to write your book, Your 7 Words to a Happier You?
Well, inspiration, that's a good word. I tell people that I had to because actually I wound up in the worst place of my life. I was in a depression. I hit rock bottom in around 2017, let's put it that way. And I just felt like I either stay there and lay there in the bottom of this black hole in a depressed state, or do I figure a way to get out? And I ultimately found my way out. And by finding my way out, it turned into this 7-word story that I created when I was a little 3 or 4 year old. And I didn't set out to write a book, let's put it that way, but I started doing these 7 words with a bunch of people that I knew. And everyone kept telling me, you need to write a book, you need to write a book. And after about 12 or 15 people saying that, I said, okay, I guess I need to write a book.
So there's your there sign.
There's my sign, 15 of them. So yeah, that's kind of how it happened.
Okay. Now, when you say you hit rock bottom, what does that mean?
Well, in January 2017, my mom passed away. And then 12 days later, I got a breakup email from my fiance. We were together for 4.5 years. And there were some other things going on, but those two were basically the catalyst that got me to rock bottom. So I was depressed. I had two full-blown panic attacks. I was at the worst possible place in my life. And I felt like I couldn't go any lower. But honestly, what happened is I had started meditating like 4 months before all this happened. And I had been trying to meditate for 20 years. So I had meditation when all this happened. So meditation was the only place that I really felt safe from all the stuff that was happening in my life. And that's kind of how it got started, really.
So you tried meditation for 20 years and it didn't work, but then suddenly it helped?
Yeah, it was one of those things. And once I started meditating, I realized that everyone who meditates says the same thing before they actually start. I can't meditate. I can't slow my brain down. And that's what I said. Oh, I can't slow my brain down. I don't have the patience for this. But somebody said, well, you made up your mind to meditate. I said, I unmade up my mind because my mind was set that I couldn't do it. So I unmade up my mind, if you will. So that was October of 2016. And I just made up my mind. I said, one night, I'm just going to meditate. I sat there and I meditated. I got up the next morning, I meditated. And I said, wow, this isn't so bad. I kept going. And this was October, November, December, January of 2017. I like to say that the universe gave me like a four-month runway because it knew that come January of 2017, there was no way I was starting to meditate after all that was going on. So,
wow. Yeah. Interesting timing. So after 20 years, when you did start meditating and it did start working for you, what did that help you discover ultimately?
Well, it's so funny because, you know, my meditation practice was just, it just gave me this place of calm and peace, like meditation is actually supposed to do. And I had never gotten any kind of signs or visuals or anything from meditation in the 4 months leading up to this rock bottom. But in the middle of my rock bottom, I had these three meditations. One of them was a clip from a movie. The other one was a voice that just came down from nowhere. And it wasn't a famous voice. It was just a voice. And the voice in the second meditation said, you gave your power away your whole life so other people would like you or love you. And I was like, wow, that's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And then the third one was kind of what actually propelled me into this story. It was a meditation and I was following this man and this man's holding the hand of this little boy. And I'm following like 15, 20 feet behind them. And it was like my point of view watching them. And they turn around and sit on a park bench. And the man, and he turned around and I looked and it was me at that age in 2017. And the little three-year-old that or four-year-old that he was holding the hands with turns around and that turned out to be me when I was three or four.
Huh.
So yeah, it was me watching me holding the hand of a little me. So there's a lot of me stuff going on there.
Yeah.
But the little, I started calling him Little Jerry, not from the Seinfeld episode, but just Little Jerry. And Little Jerry was crying and he kept saying, I can't do this anymore. I'm so tired. I can't carry this anymore. And Big Jerry's crying. He said, I don't know what it is, but I'll help you. I promise. And that was the end of the meditation. And I went, ow, holy cow, what's all this? You know, and I knew they all were connected somehow. I just didn't know how they were connected. I could just tell immediately that these were foundation points. And my background, like you said, is advertising and creative director and writer. And so people say, well, what do you do? And I like to say, I'm a collector, inspector, and connector of dots. That's what I do. I connect dots.
I like that.
Yeah. So I knew that these three meditations were actually dots to be connected somewhere. I just didn't know how they got connected. So I just started doing research and I said, okay, well, where do I start? And I just looked at all the things I had with the meditations. And I said, well, I'm going to look at 3 or 4 year old Jerry because he seems to be the one that has the most issues right now because he's the one who's crying and said, I can't do this. I can't carry it. So I started doing research about 3 year olds. And I became incredibly fascinated about 3 year olds, even though I was one once a few years ago. And I have 3 kids and they're all 3 years apart and they were all 3 at one time. So a lot of 3s going on there. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And 3, 3, 3 equals 7, apparently. So I started doing research about 3 and it turns out that they call 3 the magic age. I was doing all this research in science and sociology and all. 80% of our adult brain is in our 3-year-old body. The part of 3 that's interesting is that at 3 years old, we don't have any logic because logic doesn't start until we're like 5 or 6. So when we're 3, we're running completely on emotions. It's all about emotions. So I started doing this deep dive into threes and emotions. And I, you know, Carl Jung, psychiatrist. Actually, the first line in the book is from Carl Jung. And it says, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you'll call it fate.
Wow.
But I started doing the deep dive into Carl Jung. And he is the person who created the term inner child. That's the term we all know. So I started doing all this about inner child. And along the way, you know who Maya Angelou is, right?
Yes, poet.
Yes. So in my research and deep diving, I came up with I had heard this quote years ago, but it came up in my deep dive into inner child. And the quote was, people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel, which is amazing. Because if you think about it, that's kind of like, if you had a rule to live life by, that's kind of one, it sounds like it would be up there, I think, somewhere along the way.
Absolutely.
So I started going into this deep diving into that. And I said, okay, so I was doing what is little Jerry feeling when he was 3 years old? Well, not what little Jerry was thinking, because the logic doesn't happen until we're 5 or 6. And I started going into this, what was he feeling? And I was meditating on it. And this process took probably 5 or 6 weeks of working through all this stuff. And I ultimately came up with this little quote unquote story that little 3-year-old Jerry made up. And I made up this story to get love, and mostly for my mom at the time, because we all need love, but we can't get love unless we get attention first, right? I mean, think about everyone we know in our life that loves us, or we want them to love us, but they can't love us unless they first pay attention to us. So it's all about attention first, and then like love eventually, but attention. So I started doing this thing. So what was I doing when I was 3 or 4 years old to get attention, and getting attention from my mom? So I realized that there were this word that I came up with, and the word for me was likable. I felt like I had to be likable in order to get attention from and ultimately love from my mom. And eventually that word likable became what I call my third word of my 7 words. The first and the second one go into detail, you know, how I got there in the book. And we don't have a lot of time, so I won't go into that. But those 2 words eventually led to my 3rd word again, which was likable. And I labeled the 3rd word our persona word, our mask. Like, this is the persona that I liked. I wanted the whole world to think that I was.
Right.
I'll just give you some other 3rd words. I've done this again with hundreds of people, myself personally, and a lot more through the book. But some people's 3rd words or their persona words are, there's 32 of them in the book, but some of them are helpful. Some people get attention by being helpful. Some people get attention by being good. Some by being perfect. Some other people get attention by being nice or appeasing other people. So those are some of the 3rd words that are in the book. And those are the personas that we carry on for other people. Some other people like to perform, or some people want to be special or important. Those are 3rd words that people, that's the mask that they carry on. And that 3rd word led to my 4th word, which was control. Now, Jerry had to control being likable in all situations. Now, do you think that's possible, Heather, be likable in all situations? I'll answer that for you. The answer is no.
Right.
I didn't know that. So Jerry had to control being likable. I go to my 5th word, which automatically transferred me to my 6th word. And our 6th word, my 6th word became, and ultimately everybody's 6th word becomes what I call our sabotage word. That's what sabotages all our relationships, all of our personal romantic relationships and other relationships. So my 6th word was, what happens when Jerry can't be likable anymore and he can't control being likable anymore? There's a part of frustration that comes to it, and then it literally propels us into our 6th word. And my 6th word was, I turned out to be subordinate.
Mm.
So I became subordinate in all my relationships because I didn't want to rock the boat, because I was a people pleaser. I was petrified of confrontation. So when I felt like someone didn't like me, I went to control and then frustration and then subordinate. I became subordinate in all my relationships. I put every woman I was in a relationship on a pedestal. If you're in a relationship with someone and you put them on a pedestal, now, if they're a narcissist, like somebody and I was in a relationship with, they love being on a pedestal because that's where they feel like they belong.
Right.
But if you put somebody who's not a narcissist on a pedestal, they don't really like it up there. They don't feel comfortable up there. They're kind of looking down on you, literally and figuratively. and it winds up sabotaging. And that's what I did. I put people on a pedestal, became subordinate. That propels us to our seventh word. And my seventh word is repeat. And then I go back to number one and number two, and then back to likable and control and frustration and subordinate. So that's the seven word repeating story that comes and goes again and again. So if you think about what little Jerry was on the bench saying, I can't do this anymore. I am so tired. I can't carry this anymore. That's what he was carrying, this seven word story, you know, started when he was three and then 13 and 23, 33, 43. And every one of my relationships got sabotaged because Jerry had to be likable and subordinate, even though I didn't want to be, it happened. And that's the way I did. And if you remember that second meditation, I said that the voice came in and said, you gave your power away your whole life so other people could like you or love you.
Yeah.
After I went through this whole thing, I went, oh my God, that's how I gave my power away, by being subordinate and having to be likable. So I said, wow, that's my whole life in seven words. And a buddy of mine, and he knew that was going on. He knew all this, everything that was happening with me. And he said, so what's going on with this seven word thing? And I said, okay. And I was at his house. I had a napkin and I had a pen and I just drew it out for him. And he looked at it and he said, I can relate to that. And I looked at him like he was crazy. Like, really? He goes, yeah, but likable is not my word. I said, but you're likable. He goes, yeah, but I can't relate to it in this context. And then he said, subordinate is not my thing. He said, but I get it. So I asked him a question. I was like, okay, so his name was Rob. So I said, if you, Rob, were only fill in the blank, you would get attention and love from your mom and other people. And before I finished the sentence, he blurts out the word appease.
Wow.
Yeah, I said, appease? I said, dude, when's the last time you used the word appease in a sentence? And he said, never. He said, I don't know where that came from. And I said, well, I know your mom. I know your dad. I know your ex-wife. I know your fiance now. I said, I think that's what you do, you appease. And he said, I don't know where it came from. I said, well, I know where it came from, because I had already gotten to that Carl Jung, until you make the unconscious conscious. I'd already figured that out. And I said, that's your unconscious mind. They already knew that appease was your word. And then we wound up doing his sixth word and all that stuff. And he said, that's my whole life in seven words. I said, I know. I did it with two more people and then four more people. And it turns out it works for everybody. The youngest person I've done the words with was 13 and the oldest was 94. And every age in between, every, you know, possible occupation, except politician, I'd like to say, but no, politicians wouldn't do it. But 13 to 94, and everybody got their words. And I did it with a 75-year-old woman. And the first thing she said to me after we did our words, she said, I wish I had known this 50 years ago. So this is one of those things where I do mention Viktor Frankl in the book, you know, his book, Man's Search for Meaning.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had read that years ago, and I read it again while I was going through all this stuff. And his whole thing is, you know, it's all about finding meaning in your life. And I look at it, and this is what I was put on this earth to do. Not all the other stuff I've done and my successes and my many more failures, but this is what I was meant to do, is to share this seven words with the world. Because after I figured out what my words were, I realized I made them up, and I don't have to be likable and subordinate anymore. Now, it doesn't mean I'm not likable, but it means that I don't have to be likable to people who I have no reason to be likable for or to. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that's some great insight. Now, over the years, you've tried various forms of therapy, seminars, retreats, life coaches, psychics, self-help books that aren't your own. Why do you think the seven-word approach works so much better than those other things that you tried?
Well, it's so funny, because when I was writing the book, the editor asked me that question one night. It's like, why is it different than all the other ones? And I said, well, that's a great question. And I'm really sad about it. But this goes back to that little three-year-old Jerry dealing with emotions, that Maya Angelou quote, who will forget what you said, forget what you did, but never forget how you made you feel. So it was all about feelings. So when I created all of us created our seven-word story, it was all based on emotions. And emotions are right brain. Little Jerry, it was three or four. There is really no left brain logic going on there. But all the other things that I've done, and like you said, I've been in therapy four times. I've had three life coaches. I've read dozens and dozens of self-help books, past life regret. I mean, I've done seminars, weekend seminars, and all the CDs and all the tapes and all that stuff for decades and decades. But those were all left brain solutions to my issues. My issues were I had low self-esteem. I didn't feel I had low self-worth. I felt like I had to be a people pleaser, which I lumped in with low self-esteem and self-worth. But all those solutions, quote unquote solutions, were left brain solutions. And they're like telling you what to do, but they're not telling me why I do what I do. I like to say, you know, if Heather goes to the doctor and it says, hey, doc, it hurts when I do this. And he says, hey, Heather, just don't do that.
Don't do that. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Really? That helps so much. But that's the same kind of thing. You know, you've heard this a million times of, you know, positive thinking. You know, just look at yourself in the mirror. Just think positive thoughts and all your problems will go away. Well, how many decades have we been hearing that? If it worked, none of us would have any issues.
Right.
But that's a left brain solution. All that stuff that's going on in your mind, you just put it aside and say, you're great. You're fabulous. You're wonderful. Well, everybody in Hollywood and Washington says, I'm great. I'm wonderful. I'm phenomenal. And
gosh darn it, people like me.
And gosh darn it. Exactly. That's like the perfect example of that. That's just like the greatest thing. People who don't know what we're talking about, it's a Saturday Night Live character. Stuart Smalley, I think, was his character name. But again, you know, if that worked, then we would all be, oh, I'm going to cure myself. It doesn't work. It might work for 5 minutes. It's like a candy bar when you're, you know, on a road trip. It works for, you know, 10 minutes and you're hungry again. So that's why it didn't work. It was all left brain. So just do this and this and this and this and you'll have self-esteem. Well, no, it didn't work because I tried it all. And when, you know, I went to therapy and I'm all these life coaches, you know, like trying to get to that one little thing in my life that's really messed Jerry up. You know, that was his mother made him do his own laundry when he was 7, and that just ruined him forever. Well, no, it didn't. It didn't. It made me have clean clothes when I wanted them. That's kind of what it did, but that's another story.
Yeah.
So that's why that left brain, right brain. So the right brain part of it was the emotional story behind that feeling of low self-esteem or low self-worth or all that stuff. And this, you've also heard this, I'm sure you heard this a million times. You know, if you don't have the life that you want or things aren't going your way, flip the script, change your story. Well, I'm going to be a smart aleck and say, you can't change your story unless you know what your story is.
Right. That was my first thought too.
Right. I didn't know what my story was. I just thought my story was Jerry has to be a people pleaser and hey, it's not working for him. Okay, Jerry, well, just don't be a people pleaser. Well, as they say, duh, why didn't I think of that? But I didn't know what my story. Now I literally figured out what my 7-word story is. And I look at it and I say, wow, I made that story up. It's not true. And I go into other things in the book, like how once you understand what your words are, well, how do you pull yourself out of that? I'm not subordinate anymore. And like I said, I'm likable. Some people have their 3rd word just say is good. And people say, well, that means I'm not going to be good anymore. It's like, no, you're going to be good. You're just not going to be good to people who aren't good to you or for you. That's the difference.
And it's not going to be your full identity anymore, your persona.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I like to say that, you know, my whole life from when I was 3 and 13 to 23, likable and subordinate were driving the car and I was sitting in the back seat. Like, hey, where are we going today? Now I'm driving the car. And I say, listen, likable, subordinate, you know, like thing one and thing two.
Yeah.
You guys, if you want to come with me, that's fine. But I'm driving. You're not driving. And like I said, I've done this with a lot of people, you know, and I've done this with couples, which is really fascinating because, and I'm sure this hasn't happened to you, Heather. So this is other people, not you.
Okay.
You're in a relationship with someone or you see someone, you know, and you say, why did they do that? Why do they have to keep doing this? Or why does this person wind up with a narcissist time after time after time? They go from one narcissist to the next, but why do they do it? And no matter how many times their therapist or people say, don't wind up with a narcissist. And I like to say, you know, check your words. Whatever your words are, because there's certain words that are magnets for narcissists. Certain 3rd words and 6th words are magnets for narcissists. I'll give you some 6th words. If some people, whatever happens with their 3rd word, they go into their 6th word and just say their 6th word is rescue. Sound like a recipe for rescuing people, especially narcissists.
Yeah.
And they go from one to the next to the next to the next, or again, subordinate was a magnet for narcissists. I was married to one, didn't know it, but I was. Or if somebody's other sixth word is accommodate, seems they accommodate other people, or they give in. Those are the under six words. So there's 32 third words and 28 sixth words that people fall into those. But they affect our relationships. And if we don't know our words and our spouse's words, I'll just give you a quick example. I was this friend of mine that I've known her for years and years. We worked together in advertising a million years ago. Turns out her third word was worthwhile and her sixth word is rescue. And she and her husband, like, they used to butt heads all the time because turns out that she wanted to feel like she was worthwhile, but she had to rescue him all the time. Well, turns out his third word was self-sufficient.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Right? No. And his sixth word is stoic. And they would argue all the time about her trying to rescue him and do everything for him. And he had his hand, I was like, leave me alone, go away. There's nothing wrong. That's the stoic part, right?
Yeah.
The stoic's like the cop on the corner of an accident. Keep moving, folks. Nothing to see here. Keep it going.
Move along.
Keep
yeah.
Move along. Keep it going. And his self-sufficient is, I got this. Even if he didn't have it, he felt like he had to try to have it. So they butt heads just constantly until they figured it out. And now they don't do it anymore because she knows that, you know, she's not rescuing anymore. And she told me, I don't rescue people anymore. And I especially don't want to rescue my husband, Adam, because he wants to be self-sufficient. And he understands her now, too. So they, you know, they both understand why they were butting heads for all those years. And that's just a self-sufficient's an interesting third word. Let me ask you, do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have one brother.
Okay. So I can tell you one thing I know for sure, that your brother will not have the same third word as you. I have three sisters, and I'll just use my example. If there's a little strip mall and it has five stores in it, and there's an opening, now I want to go in and open up a frozen yogurt shop in this strip mall, and there's four stores, and there's one opening, and I want to open up a frozen yogurt shop. Now, am I going to open up a frozen yogurt shop next to another frozen yogurt shop?
Probably not.
I could. Probably wouldn't be the best business decision.
Not if you want to succeed.
Right, exactly. But so that's it. I wouldn't. So all four of us, my three sisters and myself, all have different third words because we're competing against each other already. If my youngest sister had the same third word as me, we'd cancel each other out. And that would lead those other two people to get attention. How dare they? And this is kind of, you know, Darwin talks about survival of the fittest, and he talks a lot about sibling relationships and stuff. And that's also in the book. But they're always fascinating to realize. And then once they do their words, they're like, oh, I bet you my brother's word is whatever, you know, overachiever is one of them. I bet you he's overachiever, but my sister is perfect. You know, she has to be perfect or responsible, one of the other third words. One of the third words is grown up. And it sounds really strange, but there are some people, and I've talked to hundreds of people, and I've gotten this from people. It's like, I was the mom to my mom when I was a kid. I had to be the mom to my brother, my younger brother, to my mom. So it's just fascinating. And I'm still fascinated by people's stories. And I'm not surprised anymore. It takes a lot to surprise me, but I'm still fascinated by all this.
Yeah, for sure. This is definitely fascinating. So if people want to find out more, go through the work, discover their own seven words, and obviously get a copy of your new book, Your Seven Words to a Happier You, Unlock the Stories Sabotaging Your Relationships, where would they do all that?
The website is yoursevenwords.com. And it has a little bit of a breakdown into a little bit of what we talked about, and it talks a little bit about how it came up. And also, you can buy the book from the publisher. It's available in bookstores, but there's links to all the top sellers in there, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And I have an email. There's an email address for somebody wants to email me, and if they have any questions or want to ask me something about their words or about the process or anything else, be happy to answer any of the questions that they have.
All right. Awesome. So once again, the website is yoursevenwords.com. That's the number seven, not spelled out, yoursevenwords.com. You can find out more about Jerry's book, Your Seven Words to a Happier You, Unlock the Stories Sabotaging Your Relationships. And of course, this sounds like a fascinating process, you know, very revealing, life-changing potentially. So definitely something worth checking out at yoursevenwords.com. And we've been speaking today with Jerry Giordano, award-winning copywriter, screenwriter, creative director, and of course, author of Your 7 Words to a Happier You, Unlock the Stories Sabotaging Your Relationships. And Jerry, it's been, say it again, fascinating talking to you and discovering this. And, you know, the whole process that you went through to discover this 7-word approach and what a difference it made, not just to your life, but to all the other people that you've done it with. Just really interesting and inspiring. And I'm so glad that you've been here sharing with us today. So thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it, and thank you for the opportunity. It's been great. Very much enjoyed it.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us don't know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma and advance mental health. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include Monday, June 9th at 8 p.m. benefiting Down Syndrome Connections, and Monday, June 23rd at 8 p.m. benefiting the 3630 Foundation. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. And the Las Vegas Rescue Mission is holding their annual bottled water drive through August 31st. You can drop off bottled water donations at the Las Vegas Rescue Mission security gate 24/7. Find out more at vegasrescue.org. That's vegasrescue.org.